Yeah, the super ultra hyper mega meta Lydian. I don't know if I call it a scale, but it's like a sound. The idea of Lydian not stopping it at the root when you rise, like do 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 do. You know?
Yeah.
This thing. For me, it's just like that's how Lydian sounds. That's Lydian at its most comfortable. That's optimum brightness.
That was Jacob Collier, and this is Underscore, a podcast of music and story. On today's Real Change, we explore film music's most magical musical palette, the Lydian mode.
Welcome back to Underscore, the show that explores the very best in movie music, one film at a time. I'm Marty Brueggemann, and with me as always is my brother Will.
We're excited once again to have another installment of Real Changes, these palette cleansers and musical explorations as we transition between films. The topic of today's episode, the Lydian mode.
And actually, for a taste of the Lydian mode, you can look no further than your 15-second back button on your podcast app. The piece that we played in with Serendipity, composed by our very own Will Brueggemann, really explores the Lydian mode.
And for me, when I was composing that, I really was trying to make a piece of music that felt like it was part of the classic film music idiom, a la, you know, Bruce Broughton and John Williams and Alan Silvestri. And I think it brings up an interesting point that this Lydian mode is kind of an unavoidable topic in film music. We've probably mentioned it, I think, in almost every single episode of this show
so far.
It's unavoidable. And what I'm hopeful for today is that this episode can, to those of you who don't know what the heck we're talking about when we say Lydian mode, that it can explain both what the Lydian mode is and also why it's so frequently discussed in film music.
Oftentimes, the subject of modes can be almost confusing or even intimidating to those interested in studying music. So we are going to try to tread carefully and hopefully as lucidly as possible. We inherit the modes from the Greeks, the modes themselves named after Greek isles, I believe, or maybe other locations in Greece.
Yeah, so Lydia was actually a real place that you could have traveled to. It's kind of an interesting concept, but I don't know. I always found it to be a quaint idea that the people that lived in places like Doria and Lydia embodied the characters of those modes.
That's wonderful. It's almost a Legend of Zelda-esque environment.
Yeah, the Legend of Lydia.
Yeah, which isn't inappropriate. Some of the most famous Legend of Zelda themes are featured in Lydian or one of the
other
modes.
But that's for the Super Mercado Brothers podcast.
Oh, that's so true. So of the Greek modes, our major scale, our commonly used major scale around the world, is the very first of those modes. And if we're thinking in terms of C major, the white keys on the piano, every one of the modes does use only the white keys, with each mode beginning on a different pitch.
Yeah, so the major scale is from C to C, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, but the other modes would start on different scale degrees. So for instance, Dorian would be re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, re, and in the case today, Lydian is fa, sol, la, ti, do, re, mi, fa. So basically, you get the sense that these are a system of scales that have their roots in music history, in fact, quite ancient music history, but they're still around today. In a sense, they've almost never gone out of favor. They've always had some role, whether it's small implications or very prominent uses throughout the history of music.
Something that can sometimes be confusing around the modes because they're drawing from the same materials, say in this case, the white keys. Sometimes I think for students of music, it can be a little bit unclear exactly what's unique about establishing a given mode.
And well, the other thing is people start to assume that modes can only happen on the white notes. In the same way that C major is just one of 12 keys, the F Lydian mode is only one of 12 possible Lydian modes.
Exactly. Now, before we get too far into the weeds, we wanted to recruit some help. We thought there was no one better to instruct us in the Lydian mode than the great musical giant, composer, and teacher Leonard Bernstein. Let's take a few minutes, actually, to listen to an excerpt from one of his famous Young People's Concerts. This one in particular recorded in 1966.
All right, up we climb now to the next mode, which is called the Lydian. And this one, as you might guess, begins on F. And like all the others, it uses only white notes all the way up the octave. That's the Lydian mode. Now, what makes this one different from the other two modes we've already talked about? two things. First, that it's a major mode, as you can hear. It's the first one we've met so far. And second, well, let's see if you can tell me. I'm going to play you our normal scale of F major. And now the Lydian scale, starting on F. Now, there's one very peculiar note in that mode, the only note that's different from the usual F major scale. And I want you to tell me which note is the peculiar one by clapping your hands the second you hear it. Is that a deal? Okay. First, here's the normal F major scale, and don't clap. Good. Now, the Lydian scale, and remember you're going to clap when you hear the wrong note. Ah, good, great, exactly. Now, that funny note gives this mode a very sort of comical quality, as if a wrong note were being played on purpose. In fact, several 20th century composers have taken advantage of this Lydian mode to get comic effects. For instance, Prokofiev, in his music for his funny film, Lieutenant Kije, uses this mode with its raised fourth note in this piccolo solo. Hear it? Could you detect that wrong note? But I don't want you to get the idea that the Lydian mode is only comical. On the contrary, it can be a very serious mode indeed. In fact, Beethoven wrote a long, extremely serious movement of a string quartet in this very mode. And of course, it's still used in Roman Catholic plain chant in church. And again, Sibelius, who was always a great mode lover, was constantly using the Lydian mode, as in this passage from his fourth symphony. Hear that Lydian note? Only this time it's not a funny note, but a strange, piercing note that seems to come from a faraway place. And that's only natural because these modes do come from faraway places, like the Middle East and Eastern European countries like Greece, Bulgaria, Finland, Russia, Poland. In fact, when the Russian composer Mussorgsky was writing the third act of his opera Boris Godunov, an act which takes place in Poland, he used this same Lydian mode for his Polonaise, which means Polish dance. And we're going to play it for you now, and listen for that tangy Lydian sound of the tune when you hear it. Here it is with the orchestra playing it.
Like Bernstein said, the unique feature of Lydian is its raised fourth scale degree. That's the thing that we've already mentioned so many times on this podcast. Hopefully, that example, along with some of the music we're going to play today, can really help solidify what that means when we talk about a fourth scale degree.
He also mentioned music of the Middle East or Central Asia, and in Hindustani classical music, the classical music of India, the Lydian mode corresponds exactly to a particular raga, the Kalyani raga. Ragas are a sort of form of scale system. You can think of them as both a scale and almost a song form. Let's listen to an example of the late and great Ravi Shankar performing some of the Kalyani raga. Mm-hmm.
is a beautiful example, and maybe you can hear that same raised Lydian fourth at play in this example. In Western music, there are a variety of harmonic and melodic occasions that lead to a raised fourth, but for today's purposes, we won't necessarily be focusing on those. What I'm talking about would be instances of a chromatic lower neighbor tone, a la, you know, Some Enchanted Evening, secondary dominants, which are a topic we may have mentioned before, but it's essentially making a chord into a dominant chord by introducing chromatic pitches to essentially set up either a new tonic or a new dominant. Again, if we're looking in the key of C major, it would be creating a D major chord or a D7 chord to set up our dominant in the key of C major, which is G. Hopefully that's not too confusing, but secondary dominants crop up all over the place, and they exist functionally in tonal music. That's not the kind of thing we're talking about today. We're mostly focusing on pieces or moments in music that highlight a Lydian fourth in a way that's not so much concerned with functioning in an overall major key.
Right. So yeah, we don't perceive them as sort of a temporary accidental. It feels like a stable pitch of that tone center.
And we'll notice that our ears are really quite adept at switching between different modes really rapidly. All it takes is a few notes necessarily to imply what key region we're in, or in this case, what modal region we're in.
And our examples today will vary in just how and just how long they live in the Lydian mode. As we'll see, this particular mode, this flavor, is an extremely significant aspect of film music, and our examples today are by no means exhaustive.
Yeah, like the ostinato, its prominence in film music has also grown over time, and it's inspired, like the ostinato, by a variety of outside influences.
And these influences are as wide-ranging as Indian classical music, modal jazz, and show tunes. In fact, arguably the most significant Lydian Broadway music comes from none other than Bernstein himself.
Yeah, his score to West Side Story, probably his most famous work and one of the most famous musicals of all time, is really a celebration of this Lydian mode. We're going to take a listen to perhaps one of the most famous songs from this show, Maria, and we'll see that the melody to this incredible, indelible song highlights one of the most important features of this Lydian.
Maria, Maria,
Maria, I've just met a girl named Maria, and suddenly that name will never be the same to me. Maria, I've just kissed a girl named Maria, and suddenly I found how wonderful a song can be. Maria, say it loud, and there's music playing.
Gosh, this melody is incredible. It gives me chills every time I listen to it. What I so love is that, in this case, Bernstein is emphasizing the tritone that gets created in Lydian. By having that raised fourth, you create the augmented fourth interval. We've talked about the tritone before, and it does occur in the major scale between the fourth degree and the seventh degree of the scale. But in Lydian, it's extra sumptuous because that tritone dissonance is at odds with the very tonic of the key. So in this case, what's so interesting is when we first hear that raised fourth note, it almost sounds like a mistake. It's kind of frightening and confusing. Maria. And then we resolve. And when Bernstein resolves harmonically, it totally communicates the emotions that are supposed to happen here. It's right. Just pure romance and exquisitely beautiful.
Well, and I love how that unique, potentially otherworldly feeling of the Lydian really gets almost sort of pushed on and emphasized by Bernstein in that melody. It's really unforgettable and almost the proto-example of Lydian, if you really had to start with a single piece of music. The Abersold Jazz Books, which are a series of educational books that sort of teach the fundamentals of jazz improvisation, they include a chart with popular song references for all the different pitch intervals. And for the interval of the raised fourth, it's Maria.
Yeah, Bernstein really owns that tritone interval, and I remember also in my ear training class, whenever we had to sing a tritone, they always told you to sing Maria. But it's just an incredible moment. And that confident use of accenting the color tone in Lydian, I think is very influential in a lot of our film music examples. Some of the pieces that Bernstein played, those examples of classical music, you almost just pass right through the Lydian note in a scalar moment.
Sure.
But what's great about this Maria moment, and we're going to hear it in some of these great iconic film themes, is that he's really relying on that altered scale degree as a fundamental pitch in the melody.
Absolutely. We mentioned the chart in the Abersold book of the raised fourth degree, and the raised fourth degree ends up being very significant in jazz music. Historically, the natural fourth was often considered an avoid note in jazz improvisation due to the harsh dissonances it could evoke against the major third or the major seventh. And a quote-unquote solution was to raise the fourth degree. This is something that Charlie Parker did and early beboppers did. This led then to the raised fourth sound being integrated into jazz harmony.
And this is where we get that sharp 11 chord, as they would call it in the jazz world. And it's sometimes called the Lydian chord because it's a simple alteration, but it completely changes our perception of being in major to being in Lydian by introducing that raised fourth or sharp 11th.
And this Lydian sound gained particular prominence during the cool jazz period, the modal period, courtesy of musicians like Bill Evans and Miles Davis. Let's listen to a very famous example, Blue and Green from the album Kind of Blue.
Miles Davis is really one of the first names that I think pops up in a lot of people's head when you talk about modal jazz, and he really had such a huge influence in that community. But really, the jazz focus on the modes became extremely influential in the world of harmony in general.
Now, there's another extremely significant piece of music in West Side Story that has influenced our use of Lydian, perhaps more than any other piece of music, arguably. This comes from the balcony scene, which includes the song Tonight. Let's listen to a recording sung, in this case, by the wonderful Audra McDonald and Mandy Patinkin.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Tonight, tonight. It all began tonight. I saw you and the world went away. Tonight, tonight, there's only you tonight. What you are, what you do, what you say. Just a world is a song to know.
So this song, Tonight, Tonight,
another
classic, just celebrating this West Side score, so incredible to the world of musical theater, but I would argue music in general. What's so great about Bernstein is he is this intellectual who has an appreciation of classical music, but also jazz and pop music, and he finds this perfect marriage, almost like a neo-Gershwin in a way, and combining
right.
all of these influences. And really the impact that he had on his contemporaries and a lot of them film composers as well. But this piece utilizes probably the most notable use of the Lydian mode in terms of the way that we're going to be thinking about it today, which is really about harmonic implications. A lot of times when people talk about modes, they think of them as scales. You know, you're moving through a scale and you
Sure.
alter this note or alter that note. But really the way that a lot of composers think about modes is just about different chords. For me, when I'm thinking about Lydian, say in C major, I'm thinking C major and D major. If I'm thinking about
Right.
mixolydian, you know, maybe I'd be thinking C major and G minor. You're
or
thinking
B
about
flat,
chords.
Yeah.
You're not so much thinking about altered scale steps. And this example tonight really focuses on that oscillation between a major one chord and a major two chord. There's something so wistful about having these positive, happy major chords in succession right next to each other. it has this sense of optimism that in this case, the characters are feeling. There is that confidence of just moving back and forth between these two harmonies. You almost have no desire to proceed. You know, you're so comfortable just going between those two major harmonies because they both tend to resolve into one another nicely. And they're also both satisfying harmonies. They don't really set up anything that needs to be resolved.
Now, I love how it works emotionally here. These characters are just beginning their new love and they can't contain their joy. And there's almost more happiness than is natural. Just like what we have here with these two chords, we're getting almost an additional major chord beyond what we would expect. Another thing that's happening here harmonically that's also very significant, we're shifting between those two triads, as Will mentioned, but we maintain a tonic pedal in the bass. So if we're in C major, we would have a consistent C in the bass as the upper harmony shifts back and forth between a C triad and a D major triad. And really, this expression of Lydian is a game changer. It's hugely significant to both song harmony and film music, as I think we'll see today.
Well, let's dive into some of these Lydian film music examples. We mentioned it gaining momentum over time, kind of like the ostinato. Let's listen to a relatively early Lydian film example. It's from one of the most unforgettable and stirring pieces of music in cinema, Elmer Bernstein's incredible theme for To Kill a Mockingbird. Fun fact, this piece, along with this whole score, features the one and only John Williams on piano. Let's take a listen.
Boy, I am just helpless listening to this music. It just evokes so many deep memories, both of watching the film and of my own childhood. It's incredible how Bernstein hits the emotional mark here.
Yeah, this is a piece that I think of having these different sections that are all iconic and all highly memorable and very potent emotionally. I feel like this Lydian character, to me, has always been associated to the character of Scout. And the mode in general has this optimistic, wistful quality that I think is associated with Scout's optimism and the optimism of youth. I think this is a cue that was highly influential to John Williams himself in his use of Lydian for evoking childhood. But I have to be honest, I think my favorite part of this main title is the which, I mean, sorry for a little diversion, but it almost seems like a quasi-Herman type of cue. This oscillation between two harmonies, this very pure melodic gesture. Ugh, this is such an incredible score. I can't wait to someday get to just do a focus all on To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh gosh, yeah, me too. You're so right about there being sort of a wistful, childlike element to Lydian, but it also really supports kind of a melancholy emotion. And it kind of
melancholy and nostalgic.
Right, yeah, it emphasizes sort of the sadder side of nostalgia. I think a lot of our conversations these days about nostalgia seem to dismiss it as sort of a rose-colored glasses, Pollyanna kind of simplification of the past. But I think really a big part of nostalgia is experiencing the melancholy and the loss of time that has passed.
Completely. Yeah, to me, either the Lydian mode or a major seventh chord. That major seventh chord, I think, is something that Michael Giacchino just kind of really focused in on with the score to Up. Just hearing that F major seven in root position was just like, okay, wow, that's nostalgia. Those emotions, that melancholy feeling, it's all there.
Now, around this point in time, there's another kind of, we could say, Lydian-esque flavor that's just as important to film music, and it emphasizes the existing tritone or Lydian fourth in the major scale. Will mentioned it a few minutes ago. It's the interval between the fourth degree and the seventh degree. In C major, that would be between the F and the B natural. And along with all of the other harmonic daring of the 20th century, emphasizing that sort of tritone Lydian-esque interval in the four chord became a very powerful flavor. Let's take a listen to, I think, one of the most signature examples. This comes from Henry Mancini's score to Breakfast at Tiffany's from his world-famous song, Moon River.
You can really hear the effect and influence that this had on other musical theater composers. I mean, namely somebody like Alan Menken. That particular moment going back and forth between those two chords really feels like something that you could almost imagine existing in a Menken ballad.
Absolutely. And this is really a unique sound in Western music, kind of along the lines of some of what we talked about with Bernard Herrmann's sense of harmony, where we're really emphasizing what would classically be a dissonance, sort of highlighting it. It's almost the star of the show. So we could really say in the film world, Lydian, like the use of ostinati, was really used mostly for special occasions. And a piece like the theme to Kill a Mockingbird really continued to stand out for many years in film music.
Yeah, even early John Williams scores are not really typified by much Lydian. When you think about even Jaws and Star Wars, which really aren't early for him, he was working on films back in the 1960s. But it really is something that we do associate to his career as a whole. It's almost hard to imagine a time before John Williams was using the Lydian mode as a principal component of his themes.
Right. And really, according to our research, we sort of think that all changed when a love song moment is called for in the film Superman the Movie. We've talked about it as the love theme, but it truly was a song with written lyrics. In the film, Margot Kidder ends up sort of reciting the lyrics in sort of a voiceover. But John Williams really was thinking of this as a song moment. Interestingly enough, it starts on a balcony. You could also label it the balcony scene. And it is very much in the spirit musically of the balcony scene tonight from West Side Story. And what we experience here is a very similar expression of Lydian.
The greatest melodies ever.
Oh my gosh.
I adore this theme. It's one of the greatest film themes. So incredible. But yeah, it is important to remember that this was originally conceived as a song. And I think just by the nature of the choices between John Williams and Richard Donner when creating the score to this film, it ended up being less of a song moment and more of just a theme for these characters. And I think that had a huge impact in film music and how John Williams conceived composing character themes. Because after this moment, we start to see this Lydian Lydian mode crop up in a lot of his other film music, in many of his themes. I mean, this continues to this day. You think about like Anakin's theme, for instance, right. A huge use of the Lydian mode. So many of his scores, I mean, even the new score to the BFG uses the Lydian mode all over the place. It's a staple of his writing, you could say. And it's almost traceable to this moment in Superman when he was almost trying to evoke Bernstein and evoke West Side Story in a sense.
Yeah, I really do think this might be the modern turning point in film music Lydian, both for underscore and movie songs. This is really the language of Alan Menken in the Disney musicals. And
I mean, even that ostinato, I think we've called that out before.
Right, right.
A part of your world. And that Lydian mode is a huge component of that theme in the score to Little Mermaid. Influences abound between all these incredible composers.
Absolutely. So recognizing this as a potential turning point, let's take a listen to a very famous theme that John Williams composed shortly after Superman. This comes from The Empire Strikes Back. This is Yoda's theme.
The love theme to Superman almost reawoken the Lydian mode in John Williams. It kind of led to this insurgence in film music of Lydian all over the place. I don't know. Hopefully this isn't just conjecture, but there's a reason we're doing this episode on Lydian and as opposed to Dorian and Mixolydian and Phrygian, which all play a big role in film music. It's not to say that those other modes aren't used and aren't used extensively, but for the most part, it seems like when we're hearing something in the Dorian mode, for instance, it's almost exclusively in Dorian and it's evoking a very specific connotation, either something to sound medieval or fantasy. And Mixolydian almost kind of has a similar thing, maybe feeling religious, kind of like the score to King of Kings.
Sure.
But what's great about Lydian is it just feels distinctly fit for the medium of film music because there's something about it that's timeless and there's something about it that's modern. It has this incredible range of emotions. I've even heard arguments of thinking that we should reconceive Western music around the Lydian mode as opposed to the major mode. And there are so many advantages to this mode. And you could say, even just by looking at the career of John Williams, this is a person who's explored the potential of Lydian to its fullest. And this is just one of many incredible John Williams themes that use the Lydian mode.
You could almost make the case that a lot of film composers do almost displace the natural major Ionian mode with the Lydian mode as sort of a home base of harmonic operation. Home base of harmonic operation, that could be a good band name, incidentally. So following the wake of this sort of Lydian renaissance in film music, it continues to represent grand film adventure and flight through the 80s and 90s. I wanted to pull out kind of a fun example. This actually comes from the score to The Neverending Story. In addition to highlighting a very nice Lydian moment, I actually think it's one of the great examples of integrating sort of a grid-based drum-supported beat with a lush movie orchestra. Let's take a listen.
Thank you.
You know, it's funny. Maybe it's just because I also host a video game music podcast, but this track really sounds like game music to me, just in terms of that incessant beat and the quirky mixture of, you know, 1980s, 90s synth sounds with orchestral sounds. That quirky hodgepodge of instrumentation and timbre is a staple of a lot of game music. I digress. Wonderful piece and great use of Lydian.
So throughout this period, Lydian does start to become almost a lingua franca of sweeping character themes, and in many cases, almost even replacing the natural major mode. And not only in moments of flight, but sort of a general movie magic and inspiration. Let's take a listen to a lovely excerpt from Bruce Broughton's score to Homeward Bound. By now, it's starting to become clear that this sound really is almost the sound of movies, right?
Yeah.
This is almost the sound of film music, certainly of this period of the 80s and 90s.
Well, and I mentioned some of you may still be confused. I don't get it. I'm not hearing it. This doesn't sound like Lydian. You know, when you played that raised fourth earlier, there was this dissonant sound that I'm not hearing. And that gets back to the idea that the way that a lot of composers think about modes is not in terms of scales. When we talked about that sharp 11 in jazz, there was almost something kind of striking and different about how it contextualized everything. But I mentioned earlier that our ears are really good at switching to a new mode. Oftentimes it just takes a single moment for us to accept, okay, now we're in minor. Okay, now we're in major. And we do the same thing with modes, whether it's Lydian, Mixolydian, Dorian, Phrygian. Our ears, even if we don't know what those words mean, they can adjust to these different sounds very intuitively. And I think that's what's happening here. So if you're feeling like I don't hear anything different or strange going on, that's perfectly fine. I think it's almost just a case of how functional and how effective this mode is. And I think it's more just to the point that Marty made that this is the language of film music.
I think similarly to, say, starting a band in high school with your friends in the garage and you know some power chords on the guitar, your ear might be led to, say, the Mixolydian mode without even realizing it. And really, all the modes are related. They all do come from the same materials, and they are all really balanced.
We talked about before, for today, we're thinking about Lydian in terms of being starting on F, because we're on the white notes on the piano. But what's great about that is sometimes when you're hearing, say, F major and G major, you may think you're in Lydian, but composers are actually just playing with you because you're actually starting on the fourth scale degree of C major. That happens a lot in music, and it's part of that wonderful ambiguity. And our celebration and use of the modes in the 20th century allows for new harmonic ambiguities because our ears are all the more trained for hearing these modal colors as a home base as opposed to a passing moment. You know, when Bernstein was talking about the modes in that example, they often seemed like these brief little statements that don't necessarily center us in a feeling of this mode. And what's great about film music is we are getting that. We do feel completely comfortable within Lydian or within Dorian completely.
Now, while Lydian becomes more and more integrated into the fabric of film music, it still has so much to express in that otherworldly, mystical idiom.
Really just magic, pure magic.
Absolutely. You know, I think that magical quality to Lydian is maybe behind so much of its appeal. Really, we're talking all the time about the magic of movies. And a lot of times we think about a movie being effective or not as to whether it really swept us away or whether we are actually able to escape or sort of believe in the magic of those images. Lydian is incredible for expressing that. Let's listen to, I think, an almost definitive example of that otherworldly, magical, exciting, mystical side of Lydian. This comes from James Horner's theme for Universal Pictures. Now, you might be thinking, wait, I know the Universal Pictures theme, and it's that wonderful Jerry Goldsmith tune.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. James Horner wrote a piece that was only used for a few years by Universal Pictures. And if you can't conjure it right at this moment, but lived through the early 90s, you are in for a trip down memory lane.
In a way, we probably should have played in with this because all of the other examples are almost unnecessary. You play this and you go, oh, Lydian, that's what this is. You know, that is the magic of movies.
Right. It has both the shifting two major chords against the tonic. And then I love that ending lush sort of wind down vamp.
Right.
That lovely Woodian harmonic.
Well, there are so many things about this mode that lend itself to film music. What I think is so great is a lot of the choices that James Horner was making in terms of orchestration, all those little colors with the glockenspiel and all those moving voices. You know, so many of these examples that we've been hearing with Lydian have this flowing idea. I mean, just to go back to Part of Your World, I don't think it's a coincidence that him and John Williams were both led to the same idea. And then in this cue also, there's this motor underneath it. There's something about that mode that it definitely doesn't communicate stasis. You just want to move fluidly back and forth between those beautiful major chords. And there is something magical. There's a lot of these extra musical associations that we have with it. And I think that mode, by its very nature, it inspires a lot to composers. And you can just hear it. All the magic of the silver screen is really on display in this cue. And I just think that's lovely.
We'd be remiss not to include some wonderful film music examples that employ more unique orchestrational textures. Certainly a composer like Thomas Newman would come to mind there. What I love about Thomas Newman's use of Woodian is he seems to be drawing from almost an Indian influence sometimes, certainly in, say, the score for American Beauty. He's even incorporating tablas and other Indian instruments, and there's that sense of drone.
A lot of folk music elements with Tom Newman. I feel like some of his music almost sounds Celtic. I may have mentioned that when we played some of his music to Finding Nemo, but yeah, a big part of what I would consider the Tom Newman sound is the Lydian mode.
Let's listen to a wonderful piece of music from WALL-E. This is Space Dance.
You know, so many ideas we keep coming back to. It's interesting that drone aspect is a huge part of characterizing Lydian because it's what makes us feel comfortable just going back and forth between these two harmonies. And it's something that's in both an element of that Indian raga, but an element of a lot of the music we've heard today. I mean, from that very first Bernstein example with Maria also had that drone bass. There's something innate about the Lydian mode that almost demands kind of a pedal bass line. I think all the modes are that way to a certain extent because
I think
otherwise our ears might start to interpret things as being either in a major key or a minor key, and that drone is just emphasizing, no, this is tonic, this is stability. Come join me as we take these harmonic adventures in hearing these sounds and these chords that you wouldn't get in a conventional major or minor key.
Well, I think our ears are just so naturally drawn, maybe by way of the harmonic series, to the major scale. And I think sometimes it does take some heavy lifting or maybe a really solid drone in the bass to try to more firmly establish being rooted in one of the other modes. What's so unique about Lydian, though, is we're so close to being in that firm, natural major scale that I think we might feel more stable in the Lydian mode than perhaps any of the other modes.
The tones that we describe as color tones are only that way because we're expecting something different. In
right.
Dorian, by having a major four chord, that's the part about it that feels compelling and striking, and in film music is used to evoke heroics. But I think that's only that way because for hundreds of years, we've been fed the minor mode and are used to that sound. It's all really playing, I think, with some of our expectations.
And really, to this day, Lydian is an indispensable flavor in film music. As we said, whether in long stretches or in brief moments, it's really at the heart of so much of our movie magic.
That's one of the reasons we wanted to focus on Lydian as opposed to the other modes. Its use is so far-reaching, whether in a piece like Yoda's theme, where overall we feel like we're completely just bathing in this Lydian sound, or other examples where it's just for one specific color tone. It's just for a moment, rather than having a traditional natural 4-3 suspension, we have that raised fourth suspending down. One of my favorite examples of this use of Lydian borrowing in a piece that's almost otherwise in a major key sound, again, comes from Alan Menken. And this is actually a piece of music that has been in theaters as recent as 2017.
Let's listen to Emma Watson sing the reprise to Belle.
Can you imagine me, the wife of that boorish, brainless? Madame Gaston, can't you just see it? Madame Gaston, his little wife. Ugh. No, sir, not me, I guarantee it. I want much more than this provincial life.
Thank you so much for joining us today as we swam through the rich waters of the Lydian mode, from some of the early days of film music to quite a contemporary film. It's something that I don't think is ever going to die and has really become a fixed part of the sound of movies. I really can't imagine a world without Lydian in film.
And luckily, without giving too much away, we won't have to live in a world without Lydian next week.
I don't care what they say, I won't live in a world without Lydian.
Beautiful. We'll try not to spoil where we're headed next week, but it will have something to do with the Lydian mode. Thanks again, not only for listening to this week's Real Change, but listening to our interview last week with the wonderful Joe Kramer. We can't thank Joe enough for joining us on the show, and we look forward to inviting other composers and orchestrators in film in the future.
It's always great to get the perspective of somebody who's actively working in the fields of film composition, because, of course, that's our focus here on Underscore. Again, if you have any questions for the show, we invite you to send us an email. Our address is theunderscoreshow@gmail.com. You can find every episode, as well as some occasional supplementary materials, on our website, underscorepodcast.com. We'd also really appreciate it if you were to follow us on social media. We're on Facebook. We have a YouTube channel, as well as subscribing to us on iTunes.
If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate and give us a review. That helps new listeners discover the podcast.
And as always, you can follow us on Twitter @__show.
The second underscore is silent.
That's all for this week, everyone. Until next time.
And remember, we listen because we love. Take care. Underscore is part of the Marcato Brothers Podcast Network.